Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Litecoin Underground podcast. This week I pulled something from Spaces. We actually had Lorne Starr, is what he goes by on Twitter, at LORNESTAR. I believe I have that right. Or on X, I always have to correct. But it was an interesting conversation, and he created a tool. If you go to breadcrumbs.app, essentially to do monitoring / tracking of the blockchain. And, you know, we talk a lot about in our spaces about privacy and why that's important. And I think it's important to know what's available, what's readily available to anybody who would want to look at your addresses and what kind of information is out there. So to put your address through this tool is kind of interesting just to see what's out there. But yeah, people are using this for trying to track down scammers. They're using it to track whale activity, large traders, and maybe start to develop some strategies around that. So I thought it was really interesting and definitely a good interview. So I won't belabor the intro because we do talk quite a bit. And it's Spaces, so the audio quality is usually pretty good. I think this one actually came out okay. But I also want to mention our sponsor this week, Cake Wallet. You know, they've been with us since the beginning. They've been on the front end, speaking of privacy and tracking information. You know, I brought them up in the conversation because they are always on the front end of trying to make sure you have the ability to maintain your privacy. They are adding MWeb to Litecoin soon. I think we're expecting it like in the fourth quarter. So I don't want to get you too excited. And we're going to have those guys on at some point in time to come in and talk about it. But if you haven't used Cake Wallet, go check it out. It's a really useful tool. You can buy in the wallet. You can trade in the wallet between assets. You know, if you have a merchant that wants to take only Bitcoin or only Monero, it's real easy just to swap your Litecoin into that asset for them. And you can buy gift cards. You can buy things through the through their website, just like you would on anything else, Visa cards, gift cards, all that type of stuff. So it makes your crypto really useful. So, all right. Now, see, the intro's gone on way too long. All right. enjoy the show.
You know, as I mentioned in my tweet, I'm sure a lot of you guys listened to the Drive Chains conversation we had with Paul on Saturday. Kind of want to preface some things. So going into the Litecoin Summit, I kind of decided, I was like, you know, I want to get back into making content again, but I wanted to try to find like a fresh way of looking at things. And then when we went to the summit, hung out with Sad Frogs and Animal a lot, like the whole couple days I was there, and just had some really good conversations. And I think I might have said this last week, we talked to the Stack Mobile guy and I was like, this makes sense. Like, we need to start talking to different businesses. And actually, before I even went to the summit, this Breadcrumbs app had reached out to me and I was like, all right, we'll set something up. But having that conversation with the Stack Mobile guy just kind of clicked, like, okay, this is what we should, right? It's crypto adjacent, but there's something interesting about understanding people's businesses and what value are they bringing to their customers. And so I thought, all right, that kind of makes sense. And coincidentally, right after the summit, that Layer 2 Labs reached out to me about doing an interview. And that's, so Animal and I had talked about it. And I was like, hey, I want you to start doing these more with me. It's helpful to have a second voice and kind of a second line of questioning as opposed to just me. And so, yeah, I'm kind of excited. We got Cake back on board as far as sponsoring things. We're getting other guests lined up coming in the near future. We're going to talk here in a second to Lauren from Breadcrumbs. And we're going to have Robbie Coleman on. I don't think I've told Animal this one about his virtual private money thing. His white paper he's working on. I think we're even going to branch out into some other stuff that's not necessarily crypto related, but we're just kind of interested in collectively. So look to see us. We should be putting an episode up every, hopefully once a week. I'll probably start recording some snippets like from this. I'll pull out the interview, and if we have interesting conversation around drive chains later, we'll do that. But so I guess we'll just get right into it. It probably makes sense. This is the first time I'm speaking to you, Lorne. I see you got the Canadian flag. You're going to love Animal. He's Canadian too. So let me get you up here. Hang on a second. So, Lorne, you are the founder. You're the founder of Breadcrumbs, right? I know there's a delay sometimes. Are you up here now?
I think I'm here now.
Yep. Okay, I got you. So, are you the founder of this Breadcrumbs?
Yeah, definitely. I founded it back in.
Wait, you,
yeah,
you
went, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, now you cut out for about 3 seconds after you said I founded it back in, and then another pregnant pause.
Yeah, it was the good old Twitter spaces. So yeah, back in 2019 I founded Breadcrumbs out of necessity. It was, if you remember that time, actually I think I remember like Litecoin went shot up to about 300-400 back in 2017, 2018.
Yeah.
So back then, I was doing the whole ICO world, investing in a bunch of different ICOs, and naturally one of them ended up being a scam. Actually, most of them were, pump and dump schemes or
better to
those crazy times back then. Yeah, exactly. So I've been around crypto since 2012. I've written a book on it. I was the technical editor for the Mastering Bitcoin book by Andreas. And by trade, I'm a developer. So I'm like, I went to a few different analytics companies and was trying to get access to their tools, to do an investigation to try and get money back for myself and investors, and couldn't get access to those tools. So I'm like, screw this. I'll just build this tool myself to solve my own problem. And so for a year and a half, I was just coding. It's kind of like out of, very emotional, trying to get my money back and investors' money back, built Breadcrumbs just to solve that problem. And, I said to myself, like, I would make this tool always available for, at least a basic version for retail. And through that, we ended up helping out a lot of other people, including a couple frauds over 100 million, like, some high profile ones. You've probably seen some of the Netflix documentaries. And with each experience, we put that knowledge back into the product. But, overall, what we discovered was, in order to make the industry genuinely safer, we need to give access to the community. What good are these forensics tools if only like 0.001% of the community can access it? So the community themselves need access to these tools so they can protect themselves. And, access means a few things. One, you don't have to ask permission to at least try the tool. Two, the pricing is based on the use case. So we built it in a way so that there's pricing plans for retail. There's pricing plans for law enforcement.
Let me back up a bit, because what's funny, sure, when you first asked me, I was kind of like, we talk a lot in here about no one's a fan of chain analysis or the elliptical. And we're going, I'm like, I don't know, but I thought, it's an opportunity to understand. For us, like what can be seen, and I know you're not one of those companies, so I'm not trying to and maybe you are, maybe you have contracts. I would look at it with skepticism, right? It's a tool that can be used, sure, by anybody, right? But understanding what is visible, how are these things tracked, and I guess, learning a little more about your product. So what is your, I guess when you say there's different rates or whatever, What is really the gist of what you guys are trying to achieve? Is there a lot of different results, or is it primarily the ability to find lost funds or track where this stuff ends up? Is that really what your primary goal is in your primary product?
Our primary mission is to make the industry safer. That's it. Just that simple. And the way you make it safer is by giving the community access to forensics tools. And I just, from what you were touching on is, you know, a lot of these companies like Chain, Nalsys, or Elliptic, the real key difference here is the word the community uses, which is surveillance. You know, surveillance is when, you know, Big Brother is watching you.
Constantly monitoring.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Big Brother is watching you. You can't watch Big Brother. They're always watching you. And so we flipped that idea on its head, which is we've made these tools accessible to everybody. Everybody can watch what's really happening on the blockchain. So you can watch them. They can watch you. You know, they're going to be watching you.
Anyway, is Zach XBT like your spokesperson or what? Does he do his own?
Yeah, I mean, he was like our second paying customer. So we kind of grew with him. You know, he helped provide a lot of insight into roadmap and features and, you know, what, because this idea of, you know, an anonymous Twitter, investigator never really existed before us, right? Because these tools, you know, for Chainalysis, you have to be a registered business to even just use it, or you have to be government. So we were the first ones to make this available to retail. And guys like Zach, yeah, they, you know, we grew together with them.
That's cool. So what are your, like, who's your most, like, your common customer? Like, what is it all over the map, or do you not know for the most part?
Oh, no, we know. We watch all the time. I'd say it's separated. So from retail, you know, your common customers kind of fall under two buckets, and I put them under the use case. So use case one is guys like your Zach XBT. They're probably, you know, some, you know, young kid who's just tinkering around with crypto, and they investigate crypto crime, you know, just on their own time, and they put their findings up on, you know, on Twitter. The second bucket, which is probably more relevant for your community, is the, you know, the speculators. It's still an analytics tool, right? Like, you know, you can use your Nansen to see the trends and stuff, but, you know, we get a lot of people using breadcrumbs to do whale watching. So if there are certain whales, you know, on your cryptocurrency, you know, you pop them into breadcrumbs and you can see what they've been up to. You can see who they've been interacting with, you know, times they've been, you know, moving money to this exchange or that exchange. So yeah, that I'd say that's the other big thing for speculators is a lot of whale watching.
Hmm. Yeah. I know there's always on Litecoin in particular, we've always had a lot of mystery around. There's like, I don't even remember, maybe 15 or no, something like 22 addresses that hold 300,000 Litecoin each. And nobody knows what the heck these things are. So are you able to look at an address? And I mean, obviously you can trace the history of it, but you're able to kind of build a tree of what is that individual? Like, is there a root wallet that's common between, let's say, because again, it seems they're obviously related. If somebody's built these out, like on the same day, they're breaking UTXOs up into certain configurations. Like how much information can you really get? Can you like essentially build a profile and be like, okay, this person's likely in a certain part of the world or likely an exchange or something like that? Or is it just kind of a faceless UTXO that you can start to track?
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like if you use existing, like just standard explorers, you're just going to see the, you know, the Litecoin address. And as you said, it would be faceless, right? You just see the Litecoin address. It's kind of even just hard to conceptualize, like, well, what are they doing? You just see like a ton of transactions, kind of like just one big Excel spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we take that blockchain data and we make the data consumable. So we make it very easy to understand what they're doing. So we visualize it.
Yeah.
Put in, you know, on a visual graph. And then the other thing we do is we slap on a bunch of attribution data. So we've already identified over 300 million crypto addresses. You know, generally they're like crypto exchanges. So, you know, this address belongs to a crypto exchange or some type of crypto service, like a BitPay, or, you know, we've got thousands of different entities that we've identified on the blockchain and connected them to crypto addresses. So you put those two things together and it makes it very, very easy to see who these whales are interacting with, what they're doing with their Litecoin, you know, what exchanges they use.
Putting it on exchanges or pulling it off exchanges, that type of thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
So when you've identified them, mm-hmm. like you've labeled them, okay, maybe it's just your exchanges are BitPay and Binance or whatever, but you may also have labels something like Litecoin whale number one, Litecoin whale number two, and I'm assuming the customer can also apply their own labels to addresses they want to follow.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in-house, we're generally, you know, we want to make the industry safer. So we're more, the labels that we more so focus on are the you know, just the crypto services, like your standard exchanges. But, you know, if you're doing it for the whale watching use case, then yeah, absolutely. There's a couple whales you want to watch. Just come onto Breadcrumb, sign up, and you can start labeling. We provide that functionality where you label an address, and anytime you look up on any graph or our monitoring tools, any of our tools, that label will always show up. So again, you don't have to like memorize, you know, a 30 character, you know, Litecoin address. You just have to remember, you know, you labeled it whale number one.
Has that made you, like, personally, have you, because I imagine there's people who, as your market movers, and you could probably look back historically and say, okay, the price, yeah, a huge dump occurred on this date, and these whales were presenting themselves a couple weeks ahead of time. Is that, yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like almost given the tools that you would see when we talk about these big, you know, the investment banks front running their companies, right? It's like you get to be the one to front run the masses. I mean,
absolutely.
Speculative game. You know, I'm not, you know, we don't usually talk too much about this. At least we don't talk about price. I know it's a huge part of the ecosystem. I thought what would be interesting from you is understanding what is visible, and us as users, how do we do our best mm-hmm. to blur the lines of what can be seen. And also, if you do have time, I'd love to ask you about MWeb as well, and if that throws any wrenches in your system. But Animal, do you have any questions so far?
Yeah, hey.
This is Animal.
I signed up. How's it going, Lauren?
Doing well.
I signed up to Breadcrumbs earlier and was playing around with it a bit. And I gotta say, it's pretty nice. Like, just from a user perspective, I found quickly that you've got a bunch of dashboards already set up. I guess you call them community dashboards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, right away, I can see there's a bunch of, I guess, addresses that you have set up that you're monitoring. You've got WikiLeaks here, MicroStrategy, the Tether Treasury, a whole bunch of other. You have Satoshi Nakamoto, which is, I guess, from his original wallet, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at it. It's actually really, really informative. Now, I haven't looked at any of the Litecoin stuff, but just from looking at this, and the fact that it's free is pretty nice. Interestingly, like, someone keeps sending Bitcoin to Satoshi's address.
Like, oh, really?
Every minute, it seems like. It's weird. So Yeah, like 33 cents worth. I don't understand. Is that, anyways, maybe that's some function of Bitcoin itself.
Probably an ordinal.
But.
They're probably dusting.
Maybe an ordinal.
Yeah, yeah, it could be. But yeah, you're right. It's very much, you know, it's like, you know, the blockchain is like the Matrix, right? You know, in the Matrix movie, you're watching all these ones and zeros go by. Like, that's what's happening every second with the blockchain. And we just provide a nice little, you know, user interface as well as data on top of it to help make sense of it and help you answer whatever questions you might have. Could be speculation. It could be some illicit activity. It could just be, hey, you want to see what your friend, your buddy's doing. It's always the fun thing of putting in your friend's crypto addresses and see what they've been up to.
I mean, just knowing that you could do that so easily, like, I'm going to say that's weird, okay? If someone does that, like, if someone does that to my stuff, I feel like that's a little bit, like, but knowing that that's possible and how to do it, right, like, is really useful mm-hmm. in knowing, I guess, how to stop that from happening.
Yeah. No, you're right. It can be creepy if it's surveillance, right? Like, I mean, a lot of governments around the world are doing it 24/7 all the time anyways. Yeah. But it's empowering when you know you have the access to do it as well. And so now it's just a matter of making the effort to at least just try it out and learn how to do it.
Hey guys. Hey Grant. Hey Animal. How are you?
Hey. What's up?
Not too much, man.
Hey
man.
Hey Master. Hey Mole. Before you go on. Hey Animal, do you have any way of whatever's in the background to you to turning that down or off? It's like a fan or something.
Oh, yeah, right. I'll turn it off.
It's super loud. All right, go ahead, Master.
Must be hot.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. Hey, Lauren, this is actually good timing. So a friend of mine, they got scammed out of 1,000 Litecoin in early June. He contacted the FBI, and I think he's kind of embarrassed, to be honest about it. It was his tax attorney. Somebody, like, faked the tax. Yeah, they faked the tax attorney's email. Like, it was very similar. He was talking to him for like a week back and forth. Anyways, I have his address. I just signed up to Breadcrumbs. I got it in here. I'm looking at it. Could this tool help us figure out if it went to an exchange in the United States?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
First of all, you can just pop in the address. Generally, the way we have the visualization is the address is going to the right is outgoing. So that's where the funds went. The addresses on the left are incoming. So that's where the addresses came from. Because generally when people use the tool, they're answering the question, where did the money come from or where did the money go?
Yeah. It was in his Coinbase account. And then they convinced him to move it to like a self-custody Coinbase wallet, which he didn't really understand the difference. And then he proceeded to give them his 12 seed words. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really embarrassed, obviously. But, you know, he's just a normal guy. He's a contractor. He's not in this space. Right. You know?
Yeah, that's rough, dude.
Yeah. What's kind of sad is I put pressure on him to he contacted the FBI. I told him to contact local police. I don't know if he's really diligent about it. He's like, it's just gone. Like, he's at that point. But I'm afraid these people, I mean, it's in the United States. It was in Washington State. I'm afraid they may have done this to other people.
Well, did you listen, like, I want to say 3 or 4 months ago, we talked about, I'm going to forget the guy's name, but he interviewed a guy who was scamming people on Coinbase. And it was this kid. You probably know what I'm talking about, Lauren. It was just something. Do you remember what I'm talking about, Animal?
No.
Well, he knew he was being scammed, and at some point he stops the conversation with the guy scamming. He goes, look, I know it's a scam. I'm just curious how.
Oh, those YouTubers, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it was these kids that were like 19 years old, or maybe in high school still. Might have been 17. There were a group of them. And this guy, and this is exactly what you're talking about, Master. They pretended to be Coinbase, and they ran like a confidence scam where they just got him to believe that they were Coinbase and that, we're doing some wallet maintenance. We need you to move your coins over to this
And they would give him the words, like, here, just here, or like, here's the address, here's your 12 words, and people just send the money, and it's like gone. And these kids were so, like, you know, so cocky. You're like, they're gonna get caught. They were in the U.S.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just, it was really interesting, and it
makes that's me, promising.
What's interesting when you say animal, you're like, hey, this is a little bit creepy. It's a little bit scary. What's trackable, and it makes you. That's the part I want to understand is how do we protect ourselves from being so easily tracked as well?
But you're touching on like a huge problem that most people don't realize exists, which is, let's say your buddy actually wants to pursue this with law enforcement. He'll go to his local police and they'll be like, we have no idea what this is even, you know, or what to do.
Exactly.
Once they get past like the knowledge, or maybe you do get some police who actually know what crypto is, they won't have access to these tools, you know, because they also need to pay, like, you know, shell out $50K just for a license. So what ends up happening is like the minimum threshold for like any law enforcement to actually, you know, put resources to an investigation is maybe like 25, 50 million. Like, you know, and lost funds, anything below that. And they just don't have the resources or the knowledge to even bother investigating it.
That's insane.
That's that kind of makes sense. So can you help us maybe provide some suggestions? Is there a way we could maybe do a bounty or something, or is there some people out there that can help? I mean, we could probably use this service maybe to figure it out. Mm-hmm. What do you have any kind of recommendations? You've been in this space for so long. How to pursue this? Just because it's possible they may be doing this to other people, right? I mean, it was an elaborate scam because it went on for like there's an email thread that went between him and his wife and the tax attorney, which wasn't the tax attorney, but the signature was the same, like the. It was all very similar. He's like, I need your, the IRS contacted me. I need your tax information from Coinbase. And this is how you give it to me. And he just like fell into it.
Mm-hmm. So on our website, so there's two ways you can approach it. One is, do you feel you have enough expertise to at least just trace the funds yourself and see where it went?
Yeah. Yeah. We can do that. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
And so that's generally the question you want to answer. What exchange did the funds go to? Because at some point they're going to liquidate it onto, especially Litecoin, they'll probably liquidate it onto an exchange or spend it on some like, you know, PlayStation game or something.
I see. Okay. So you click.
You can just hover over and expand out.
I think I see what you're saying now, Lauren. So I had to click it a couple times. It looks like. Right. A portion of it went to Binance, has a little Binance logo.
There you go.
On a portion of it.
So that's the first step. Now, you know, it's already, you know, some of it's gone to Binance. Now the next step is you can't contact Binance. It's only law enforcement that has subpoena power.
Okay.
And so the idea here is you need to put together a report for local law enforcement, like wherever your buddy is. And try to convince them to do a subpoena. That can be a bit of a challenge sometimes. Mm. Depends on which jurisdiction you're in.
Washington State in the United States. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so from there, if they work with you, great. If not, there are some partners. We do have quite a lot of crypto investigators that's in our investigator directory. Okay. Who, you know, this is what they do full time.
Yeah.
You know, business is booming quite a lot, especially with the pig butchering scams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can advise you based on your jurisdiction, who you should go to, or, you know, they'll put together like a bit more of a professional report that can be handed to law enforcement. And hopefully, you know, one of them does take up the case. And that's kind of, you know, I'm sorry to say, but that's kind of where it's at now.
No, that makes total sense. I mean, to your point about local law enforcement, they're not going to have a clue about what to do here, right? I mean,
yeah,
they contacted the FBI in Seattle. And I think the dollar amount is enough. It was like $85,000 at the time that it would, you know, it's over $5,000, right? So I think they would handle it. It's not millions, but it could be millions potentially, you know, soon.
So yeah, FBI level, they'd probably look at that.
Yeah, this is really cool. Yeah, I clicked on another output, and then it like spiderwebbed.
And it's probably, you know, it's probably related to like other victims. You could probably, so that's generally what we see with a lot of scams is we'll see our original victim funds go to like, you know, one or two hops out, then maybe two hops out. There's like one address that's received millions of dollars,
I see,
you know, from other victims as well. And they consolidate all the victims' funds into one address and then liquidate onto an exchange. So these are the kind of similar patterns we see from suspects. And that might be what's happening here. But, you know, it's good timing. That's part of why we reached out. Like, we just started supporting Litecoin.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. So the timing is really good here.
Yeah. Why did you guys add it? Was there somebody like at the foundation that reached out to you, or what was the reasoning?
I mean, it's a couple things. Like, you know, I've been in the space for so long. Like, I started mining Litecoin back in 2012 when it was like a dollar, under a dollar. You know, and so it's more so from the crypto exchanges. Most of them do support Litecoin. And we have a compliance solution for crypto exchanges. It was more so out of our user base just requesting it.
So like a demand, there's a demand coming from those entities, right? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah. Like crypto exchanges use it to mitigate their risk of exposure to illicit funds. They have to do it to follow regulations. And, you know, most of them support Litecoin. So
what's cool is I see that you've got a bunch of currencies, right? Some are premium, like Tron and Dogecoin are, I guess, tagged with premium. So I guess that's for an upgraded account. Litecoin, on the other hand, I guess is accessible to anyone.
Yeah. We just made it accessible to anyone.
The promotional free period, and then they're gonna get you.
That's right. Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna.
Depends, I mean, they start at $12. It's not like we're we're killing you on the money there.
So is it?
No, it's cool.
I'm afraid to punch that. See, I've got a wallet and my address right now. I need to change to an mWeb as soon as we get mWeb mobile in my bio, because Cake Wallet has that API, or they did at least, where they could just look up your, they could send it to my Twitter handle and it would pull the Litecoin address from my bio. So I do my best to keep things separate, right? As far as like, I have a unique wallet for just that, but to say I've been perfect on that, I couldn't guarantee that. And I do wonder about, I don't even want you to plug that address in Master, but I already know you have, because it's the type of person you are. I may want to know, like, can you see linked to it, and what's the danger of that? That kind of scares the crap out of me, to be honest with you, because you hear about, you know, Jameson Lopp is the king of spreading the scary news.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody broke into your house, hit you with a hammer, and took your coins. I mean, is that, I feel like that's maybe the thing I want to try to take away from this is people who are going to listen or who are in here is, how do you make sure you're protecting yourself against something like that? And is it like, here's some things we talk about a lot, right? What happens when I go on to like Cake Wallet, you know, we use them a lot, and they've got a swap
function, and I'm swapping between some self-custody Litecoin and into BTC or Monero. Is there some, I mean, obviously the chain breaks once I go to Monero, right? There's no way of knowing beyond that. But do you know what Bitcoin is mine at that point in time just because of the values? Is there a way of connecting those things?
No, we wouldn't. I'm pretty sure Cake Wallet is centralized. So the information of knowing that it went from Litecoin to Bitcoin would be on the Cake Wallet servers.
Well, there are self-custody wallets.
Okay.
But the swapping function does use, I think it's either Change Now or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Where I don't have to register as a user or anything, but they're obviously...
That's right.
So Change Now, if hypothetically somebody were to subpoena them or something, I don't know their layout, they would have that information.
Yeah.
But not public. Change Now would have it's a not bit public, more
information.
Know. Yeah.
The information they would have is like IP addresses, you know, because you have to go and use their front-facing website. I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure Change Now, it would be. You know what? Yeah, it's. I'm pretty sure for Change Now, if it converts from like ETH onto like an ERC-20 token, like if it stays on the same chain, you'll see that. On the blockchain, but if it hops from one chain to another, there's got to be some type of centralized service, a centralized server acting to manage that chain hopping. So you probably need to subpoena from like a Litecoin to a Bitcoin, but not necessarily from like ETH to USDT on ETH.
I'm sorry, I my daughter asking me.
No, I think.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, no, I think with
quite complex.
With Cake Wallet, by default, you have to use their nodes, right? As well, they have support for Tron. I don't know, if you would need to subpoena Cake to get access to their servers if they're keeping track of IPs and whatnot. And any records regarding transactions that come out of their nodes, and then just simply look it up on Thorchain, right? Because it's a transparent ledger,
right?
But I was wondering how you guys have managed with MWeb, if it's been a blocker for you in that respect.
Do you mean like MWeb is just an explorer?
MWeb, the extension block. Maybe.
Okay.
It's pretty new. You may not know about it.
I should stop talking right now. Never mind.
So do you know what MWeb is at all, Lauren?
Gotcha. No, I'm guessing is it. I'm kind of learning about it now.
Oh man, I'm so sorry, guys.
No, well, I mean, obviously.
It's a large upgrade to the Litecoin network.
Yeah,
providing
it's
an extension.
Exactly.
Block, inside. So you have to move from main chain Litecoin, and you peg out. You're not relying on any. It's only reliant on the Litecoin network. It's not a third party. There's not somebody who's federated side chain or anything. So the miners mine these blocks alongside standard Litecoin blocks. And once you move into MWeb, there is no address seen, and there's no values seen by the
public. Oh, right. Okay. I remember hearing about this years ago when they were talking about adding a, this is like a privacy.
Yeah. Version. Yeah. Grin had Mimblewimble. Beam has Mimblewimble. It's a variation on those. It's not, and I'm not technically adept to tell you the wild differences, but there were changes made to it essentially to make it more user friendly. As far as, I guess Grin was
You had to both be online and coordinate transactions and all this, but this is like a non-interactive privacy layer. And there's been, it's kind of been a lot of debate because Grin, I don't know, there were some people that claimed they cracked Mimblewimble at some point in time, but it's not, there was kind of controversy whether that was actually true. So I don't know, but if you haven't looked into it, then it might be something interesting to test. If you'd be willing to do that, that would actually be awesome to say, like, hey, we want to put some coins in there, move them around, split them up into different values, take them out. And
right.
Can you relate the initial sending wallet to the withdrawal wallet?
I'm looking at it now. I mean, if it's set up as a privacy layer, like, by nature, the transactions are not going to be made publicly available anyways. So
they're not recorded they're not recorded publicly. What we have heard from some people claim that if you have like a node where you're monitoring all activity going in and out, that there's some way of seeing some of the activity. There's some address linkability issues. If you take it off MWeb and put it back into a wallet where you have other addresses that you've used before, you're just kind of basically relinking everything. Does that make sense? Relinking those transactions.
Yeah.
Well, good. Now, maybe what we do is we have this, we learn a little bit, and then we do some investigating, and you can critique MWeb for us. Because I want people to know, I want them to have an accurate understanding of what they're exposing to people.
Right. I mean, I'd say generally, if you're able on a standard blockchain explorer, like I'm looking at the MWeb explorer now, if you're able to see the inputs and outputs, like all the different crypto addresses interacting on a transaction, if you could see it publicly, then it can be, you know, added to our tools, like,
because you're
investigators.
Yeah. You're looking backwards at what's publicly available. You're not actively monitoring the
mempool
or anything like that.
Yeah, we're not monitoring the mempool. Definitely not. We keep a history of every single blockchain transaction for all the blockchains we support. We keep multiple copies of it, and you know, we have a special process that slices and dices that information and converts it into the nice, simple visualization you see.
Yeah, that's cool.
But we can only do that with publicly available data.
And that's all that the exchanges are required to do.
Well, the exchanges themselves, by nature, their addresses are going to be made public. It's very easy for us or any other company to get their crypto addresses. It's very simple. We just sign up on their exchange. We deposit a little bit of money and see where the money goes.
Well, so what I mean is, like you said, regulatorily or legally, they have to employ these services. They're trying to intercept AML stuff, people that are money laundering, or somebody who's linked to a crime, like what Master's saying. Hey, he may not get this money back, but if he can find a way to flag an address and flag a user, then all the exchanges would blacklist that user, essentially. I'm guessing, right? It goes out as like a Interpol or something.
There is an intelligence network where these blacklisted addresses are shared. Yes.
Interesting.
But
have you learned more about surveillance than you would like to know? you wish you didn't know the things you know about surveillance?
No, I mean, there can be some negative side to it, like where, you know, some authorities do take advantage of that power, but for the most part, it's actually, you know, it is being used for a public good, especially in crypto. Like, the amount of resources, you know, government and law enforcement has is so limited you know, even the crypto exchanges, it's so small compared to how much crypto crime is happening. So, you know, the work that they're doing, we need to do whatever we can to help them. So I don't really see it as a scary thing. I see it as the scary part is just they don't have enough resources like to keep up with, you know, like your buddy who's a victim of a crime. Like that's, so I don't really see it as like I've seen too much. It's more like, you know, as a community, we need to help these guys, you know, help protect us.
Hey, to that point, Lauren, I'm just thinking here as you're speaking, is there an opportunity maybe for people who are technically capable to help out in that effort, to help people that are vulnerable or have been taken advantage of in scams? I mean, if someone like, you know, my grandparents or whatever, or your grandparents, you know, they come to you and they're like, yeah, I just got this ransomware thing or whatever. I don't know. Like a resource, just even though it's, you know, for all types of different scams and at whatever point, like, it seems like it's going to be more and more needed in the future. And this is something that, you know, maybe a small agency could use to achieve such a goal, you know, on a larger scale. Yeah.
You can see in our investigator directory, we've got quite a lot of crypto investigators from like large cyber companies, you know, larger cybersecurity companies to like just individuals who are trying to do this as a business. You're right. Like there is a community of crypto investigators popping up in every jurisdiction around the world. Because that demand just keeps increasing.
Oh, cool. I'm looking for it now. I guess it's in the tools section or
no? At the very bottom of the webpage, there should be a link there for investigator directory.
Oh yeah, I see it. Okay. Wow. I got people in the UK, Singapore, UAE.
I'm right now about to look at my address to see what I think I've been good, but you know, we've talked about this a lot. You know, we talk about the traceability and obviously, cause you have, of course you have what I would call maximalists of every chain. Right. And, the Monero people are like, look, end-to-end privacy or nothing else. And I understand that. Nothing but positive feelings about Monero. It does what it's supposed to do. And I've always been a believer that the mass use of these tools is what makes it very difficult to pin particular transactions on an individual. If there's a lot of money moving around where it's really hard to necessarily say, well, they sent it to themselves or did they send it to somebody else? You really don't know at some point, right?
Right.
And that the pseudonymity will cover most people enough. And I'm not sitting here, we're not all sitting here trying to be criminals. And I appreciate what you're trying to do because it's not a good look for the crypto industry when someone can just be scammed, like what Master's saying, and they don't understand this is digital cash. And when it's gone, it's like they went into your house and grabbed a stack of cash. It's gone. There's not much you can do. But you're doing everything you can to try to help people like this. And so, yeah, I'm just kind of wondering, like, to me, it's plausible deniability, right, is what we're trying to create for, I don't want to say for bad actors, but for people trying to maintain a certain level of anonymity and privacy. Mm-hmm. Can they achieve that pretty well? Or do you feel like as these tools are used more and more, it will get harder to trace what you're doing, especially if people aren't even interacting with exchanges, if they're just using these as intended as digital cash.
Right.
May I interject there? Don't what you guys you think
what's going on?
Don't you think that 99.9% of people in the world within 15 years are never going to directly, you know, interact with the blockchain? They're going to have a wallet built on top. They're going to send it like on Facebook or their banking app on Chase. So I think all this is sort of a moot point because eventually there's going to be two classes of people. There's going to be you, I, and everyone in this group who uses, you know, Monero and Litecoin directly. But in 15 years, I'd imagine nobody's going to have a ledger. Nobody's going to have, you know, whatever these things are. They're just going to use, you know, Coinbase wallet. But, you know, I'll mute myself now, but that's what I think.
Okay. So yeah, there's quite a lot to unpack there, but generally what you guys are touching on is the world of privacy. You know, and absolutely, it's very legitimate for, you know, a lot of people to have the ability to keep their transaction history private, for sure. And for those people, they can. They have that ability to do that. It just requires effort. And so what you're getting on with the last comment was most people are not going to make that effort to do that. You know, it requires education. It requires getting the right tools, building it. So I'll give you an example. If we go back 20 years, the comparable version of this is setting up your own email server versus just going onto Gmail and setting up an email account. You know, you can set up your own email server that is completely independent of some large entity that will be tracking all your emails and stuff, you know, can be subpoenaed by law enforcement. Or you could set up your own personal email server, run the server out of your house, you know, maybe have it running on a constant VPN that's switching, you know, IP addresses all the time. And that way you can maintain full anonymity with your emails. But it requires effort, you know, it requires knowledge. So, you know, as you did say, like 99.9% of most people are just going to sign up for Gmail. And it's the same thing here in the crypto world. Like, most people are not going to maintain their own Litecoin node. But if you want that ultimate anonymity and that ultimate privacy, yeah, you can. You have that ability to do it.
And wouldn't it be interesting?
Require effort.
But wouldn't it be interesting to focus on, okay, so yeah, sure, you can, you know, have a technically proficient person gather a bunch of other technically proficient people, and you'd have like 15 people out of, you know, 50,000 sort of sort this out. Or rather than building a second layer coin on top of Litecoin, you can just build a second layer technology that isn't tokenized, like a signal, like how Signal you can send messages without anybody tracking you.
Yeah.
And then you can put your Litecoin on that, and you can have a trusted third party company. We all use trusted third parties, you know, our government, Facebook. So, you know, and then that way we can have that anonymity on mass scale, and then also stable coins. And that'll be my final comment. I'll listen the rest of the night. Thanks.
Well, you can. So yeah, what you're talking about, there are some services that make it easy to maintain your anonymity. So the best example of that in crypto is something like a Wasabi wallet or Samurai wallet. I'm pretty sure Samurai was shut down, but Wasabi is still going, and they're fairly limited in which jurisdictions they could run. So you see, it's like the tools for anonymity are also being used by the criminals. And you know, there's been this back and forth between law enforcement to at least contain or control, you know, their ability for the privacy. You know, the privacy is really executing coin joints. That's when you can really make it easy to launder the funds. And that's done can be done easily through a Wasabi wallet. Now, Wasabi, you know, they've actually been really good at trying to work with the authorities. Like, these guys, they're technologists. They believe in privacy rights, but at the same time, they don't want to go to prison. they don't want to have their business shut down. So in the back end, they'll actually still implement some type of risk scoring to ensure like the money going in didn't come from like North Korean hackers. So like what I'm trying to get at is no matter what type of third party service you can use to help with anonymity and privacy, at some point you never know, like 100%, is it 100% private? You know, if you're using a third party service, you're trusting that they're not going to, you're trusting that they're going to maintain your privacy, but again, they're always going to be under pressure from like governments or law enforcement. So if you want to maintain 100% privacy, you can only trust yourself with this.
Well, what gets, you know, our spaces will take left turns all the time, Lauren. So just be aware. I don't want to take a totally different tangent, but, you know, Animal.
Sure, no worries.
Well, I mean, you're in Canada, you know, the whole Canadian trucker thing. And I was just talking to Animal today. We were talking about the show a little bit, and I was like, I'm talking about this stuff going on with people getting arrested for Facebook posts. Right. So, like, how, you know, and like you said, certain governments might start to say, well, you know what? We're going to crack down on this stuff, and just on some sort of bizarre principle, or I guess what governments do with abuse of power, to freeze people's accounts just based on, yeah, you said something mean on the internet and you're going to jail and we're freezing your money or whatever it might be. Right. I'm curious, I guess, do you feel like, cause I tend to like what's interesting. The other thing I talked about with animals, like I'm a person, I want to think optimistically about the world in front of us instead of it's all gloom and doom. As much as I don't always sound that way. so I guess what I'm wondering from your perspective is, do you feel like this is such a difficult thing? It sounds like they're already under-resourced as it is, that we're a long ways off from them ever getting to the point that they're going to have that level of sophistication.
Right.
Like, particularly if you're not on an exchange. If you're on an exchange, you're pretty much, you're subject to whatever anyway. But if you're, like, the ability to sell, to identify you as, hey, this is this person's self-custody wallet, and these are the addresses that need to freeze because they, you know, whatever. Yeah, said something mean, or they're a political dissident. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just wondering if you feel like, is this such a niche industry that to even find people to accurately identify these people is just almost impossible?
It's really luck of the draw, like which jurisdiction you're in and how far ahead, you know, how caught up is that local law enforcement or whatever government agency trying to get whatever on you. Like, you know, it's not even just police. It could be IRS. It could be, could be any other type of government entity or company. So a lot of that is the luck of the draw, but I just say from my point of view, I see it more as this is just the natural progression of technology being adopted by the world. And there's going to be growing pains. There's going to be, some people that get it earlier than others. It was, you know, the exact same thing 20 years ago when, you know, PayPal started out, and there was this whole, wait, you're going to put your credit card on the internet? Like, who are you giving it to? You know, it's the Russian hack. Like, it's just the next evolution of a technology being adopted by the world. And there's going to be good to it. There's going to be bad. Like, it's going to unlock a lot of value for different groups of people, but it's also going to create opportunities for some bad guys. That's how I see it, you know, and for what we're doing, we're just trying to provide a valuable service for the community, you know, to empower them to take part in this world.
Yeah, it makes me think about, I forget when this was. I want to say there was a terrorist attack, or it might have even been, oh man, there was a city in California where there were a few terrorists that kind of went into the streets with weapons, and there was kind of a debate. The terrorists died, and they had their cell phone, and Apple was trying to say, like, you know, I don't know where the line is on how much information. Can we hack the phone to get into it?
Right.
Maybe we can, maybe we can't. What legal obligation do we have? And Apple's been surprisingly one of the better companies in trying to protect their users' privacy. I feel like
maybe I'm crazy, but I feel like more than anybody else, they've been trying.
I'd agree with you on that.
They've been trying to have the conversation, right, of saying like we can't just make it every single time cede to the authorities. We have to keep our customers in mind. And I don't know. It's funny because like I'm a law abiding person. I just feel like it's one of those things that if you just throw up your hands and go, yeah, you can just look at whatever, you're just asking for it to be taken advantage of, you know?
Wouldn't necessarily throw up your hands. I mean, it's just, that's the rules of the game. The data is going to be out. The data is public. if it's something you want to maintain your privacy on, you have the ability to do it. It just takes work. But otherwise, you know, if you're on the side of convenience, then that's the, you know, same thing that happened with Facebook, right? A lot of people know like their data is going to be mined. They're giving tons of data away to Facebook, but it's so convenient. It's so easy to use. It brings value to it, you know? So
that's, kind of, you know, it's funny because, you know, like you guys mentioned, in 15 years, won't everybody just be on a exchange? I don't know. I don't know that it's going to change that much. I feel like you don't have much value. I don't know. The permissionless nature is what makes these things valuable. Once people start putting their money into trusted third parties, they lose a lot of the characteristic of the thing that they so valued in the beginning, right? So,
but they're not going to value it that way. Like, in other words, in 10, 15 years, if this is adopted.
But if your bank account got frozen because you posted something bad on the internet, you might start thinking twice about how you're interacting with your money. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. But like in the future, I feel like people are going to, you know, if they want privacy, they're going to opt for a different, you know, chain. But most people are just going to buy coffee and, you know, pay for their kids to go to college. And there's going to be weird, you know, there's going to be different kind of ways to, you know, be private. What if, ironically, the way to be private in the future is to exchange your crypto for dollars? You know, you spend your money in the street.
What if they tax you 10% for all the crypto you hold?
What do you mean?
Then you will tax. Just, we're going to take 10%.
Yeah. Okay. But you said you're a law abiding citizen. Like, I'm not going to go to jail. I'm going to pay my taxes. And if I disagree with them, I'm going to move states or countries. But, you know, I doubt the average citizen is going to, you know, like, that's an advocation, you know, to break the law. Like, I don't want to have privacy to be a criminal. I want to have privacy be independent.
It is a blend of the social layer, too, right? The ideally, as a society, we collectively say, you know, that's not cool, right? We don't go for those things. But you just don't know government, right?
That's true. But collectively, we'd make a law, you know, and by voting on it. So if, you know, there was a law, even if you independently disagree with it, you know, society at large in
but
theory would.
You know what? Here. Like, this is a new phenomenon. Like, this tracing of our transactions is new to us, to our generation. Like, since the 80s, right? Beforehand, before the credit card, everything was transacted. It was ad hoc, right? It was peer-to-peer. So this is a new thing for humanity. I think we've lost a lot of privacy in the last 50 years.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And we owe it to ourselves to try to claw some back, you know?
But it's always, on one side, it's privacy. On the other side, it's convenience. You know?
You're right. It's voluntary. A lot of it's voluntary.
Yeah.
I mean, I people complain all the time, oh, Google's listening to me. And sometimes I'm searching for something. I'm like, I'm kind of glad Google was listening to me because they're getting me, they're feeding me ads of things that I'm actively interested in right now. And I don't.
Yeah, they still provide value.
Yeah, there's obviously value provided, or it wouldn't happen, right? If it was only, like you said, if it was purely invasions of privacy with zero benefit to the user, people would reject it, or they would have a limit. They'd be like, okay, enough, that's enough. But it's interesting. It is a bit of a social layer that people get to decide, and that's probably what I think we would all want to say is, we all get to choose the level of privacy that we want.
That's the key word. Yeah, it's the choice.
But I don't want to impose my will on somebody else. If I understand, I had a friend who was, oh God, He's so technically inept, it's not even funny. But I was helping him with just his ledger and making sure he always deposited. And he'd want to come over every couple months. Hey, let me just check the balance, make sure it's right, everything. Because he'd always be nervous about it. And I'd be like, you understand the coins aren't on your ledger, right? Like, it's just the device that accesses the private keys. Everything's on the blockchain. You can just go look it up from your house. But this didn't connect. And he at some point in time was like, you know what? I just want to put it back onto Coinbase. It stresses me out. And if whatever things get frozen, well, goddamn, then that just sucks to be me. But I just don't want to manage it like this anymore. And so I get that. And he's allowed to do his own thing. I'm not going to sit here and tell him not to. It's his money and his decision. So that's probably the best part is optionality.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, this is cool. This is a good conversation, Lauren. So can you
be willing to
take me up on this MWeb thing and see what you're able to see or find? Trace?
I mean, I'm looking at it now. Like, it's looking at some transactions. Like, where's the privacy layer to it?
Okay, so here's what happens. In every Litecoin block, you have a what's called, so MWeb is Mimblewimble was originally it came from a Harry Potter spell. It was in one of the books or something. And so there's a lot of Harry Potter reference to this. So there's a Hog X block, which is for the Hogwarts Express. So everybody that wants to move onto MWeb, all those transactions go into this Hogwarts Express and they move to MWeb. And inside MWeb, you can stay there as long as you want. You can conduct as many transactions as you want. There's no addresses, no values.
Right.
Like, yeah, you can stay there. It's like being Peter Pan. You can stay there forever. And then when you come back, there's a return block that all the addresses, all the people choosing to leave MWeb come out in one block. A UTXO, one transaction. So there's one input and all these outputs going back to the people who were in MWeb and choosing to leave. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So,
yeah, I mean.
So, yeah, what a lot of people have said and what I'm curious about is what relationship is there between what went in and what comes out? Is there any connection at all? And I think we're all a little bit in the dark as far as how that works. I mean, Jose's got his hand up. Maybe Jose knows. Do you know Jose?
No, I don't know.
Dude, how funny it would have been if you just came up and said, "No way, Jose." All right, go ahead.
Classic.
I'm a dad. I'm dad joking. All right. Sorry. Go ahead. What did you have your hand up for, man?
No, I was going to talk about the, you all were talking about, Apple and PayPal and privacy. And you were also mentioning MWeb and, privacy on Litecoin, right? So I was kind of curious to know, do you think that MWeb and drive chains on Litecoin are going to be like the Apples and PayPals of Web3 data? You know, because you, transact on Web3 you're in Web3 and you're making transactions, doing transactions, it doesn't always mean that it should be public. And that's kind of why we have MWeb, right? So do you think those services are going to become like that, where you have some level of privacy and then, I guess government entities are going to be like trying to sniff out that information?
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
By nature, MWeb's supposed to be decentralized, right? So there shouldn't necessarily be one central authority, at least being able to freeze funds. So that's one side. Then in terms of identifying addresses and stuff, I mean, if the transactions are made public, like, this is what I'm having trouble trying to find is I'm looking at an MWeb transaction and I can see inputs and outputs. So I still don't know where the
right. So that one address, like all the inputs are going into it and you'll see that the balance of that address is massive.
It's all grouped together. I gotcha.
Yeah.
So you're not,
okay, yeah, that makes sense.
You're not seeing what's happening. If I gave you an MWeb address, it would come up.
I got it.
A null. You would get a null reaction from the
I see it now.
Explorers. Yeah.
So they're grouped.
It's kind of cool, right?
Big cat. Yeah, it is. It is. So in that case, I mean, you know, the question is, how are those transactions being grouped together? Like, what node or what service is doing that?
Yeah, that's the Mimblewimble spell, right? Gotcha. So,
someone, whoever is running that node, might have that information, right? Like, it's all about who has that information to group together those transactions. And, you know, we don't have access to that. You know, we're not going to be able to decipher that, you know, unless we start running those Mimblewimble nodes or those MWeb nodes.
It's Litecoin Core, right? So it doesn't take much. And you have to assume that, you know, FBI, NSA, whatever, are doing it just out of, I guess, doing their due diligence, right? I mean,
I'd say they're doing it if it's worth their time, because they've got enough cases to, you know, to prioritize. Like, they have more cases coming in than they have resources for. So if there's a lot of, you know, illicit activity starting to happen on MWeb, yeah, sure, they'll invest in it. But they're, you know, Monero is where most of the, like, most of their resources is trying to reverse engineer.
Yeah,
really?
Sounds like a dead end, though, right?
Not necessarily. It depends. You know, these mixing tools, even like Tornado Cash or Coin Joins, there are researchers around the world that can try, not with 100% accuracy, but with some, you know, level of accuracy, they can try to reverse engineer transactions. It turns into a probabilistic, we call it like probabilistic, you know, path where maybe the funds, 20% chance the funds went down this path, 20% went down this path. And then they could try to, piece it together that way. But yeah, the authorities themselves, if it's worth their time, they'll try to. And it's generally like high profile cases, like, you know, the Bitfinex hack. Remember the husband and wife that Razzle Khan, like,
yeah,
that some of the funds went through Monero. You know, how did they trace that? Like,
they probably put 10 Bitcoin in and took 10 Bitcoin out 10 minutes later.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now you're pointing it out. These are some of the ways. Like, it's also up to the person moving the money through to use those tools properly. Yeah, like, there's better ways to hide your tracks. Like, it's so in terms of MWeb, like, I don't necessarily see a lot of transaction activity happening just yet, but if a lot of dirty funds are starting to move through it, then yeah, they'll pay attention to it. But until then, like, it's probably not worth their efforts
It's only on the hard or on the desktop wallet right now, and we're in the next month or two is going to have MWeb will be on Light Wallet and Cake Wallet, so it's going to start becoming available for mobile. And then I believe we have Ledger or Trezor, one of the two is someone's found kind of a workaround. So it's been there for 2 years, but very light usage just because not many people run those desktop wallets, right?
Right.
Folk.
from the illicit actors, you know, they too care about convenience. You know, they're not gonna set up their own nodes or servers or whatever. Like, they also want to use easy tools to launder their money. So maybe they'll start using MWeb. I don't know. Like, if it starts to become convenient to launder funds through, maybe they'll start doing that too, mixing it with legitimate transactions.
It's funny because, like, talking about that Apple case, like, there are, you know, I listen to a lot of stuff like crime shows and stuff, and it's easy to be a privacy advocate, and I certainly think that should be the default setting, but you do find out about cases, and you're like, man, if there's a way to catch the people that are doing this, yeah, just pilfers 80 grand from a honest, hardworking person, you're like, you know what? Fuck those people. So it's like, it's hard not to instantly switch into another mode of forgetting kind of your principles and saying, that's just wrong.
Right.
And striking that balance. It's always going to be a gray area. There are always conversations. You're never going to have an absolute, but I think, and that's, like I said, what I liked about Apple is at least they've haven't been just quick to just comply. They've said, listen, we're going to do our best to protect our users. But in most cases, they eventually give in, and maybe that's okay. They have some sort of internal review. And the difficulty is these corporations don't have a lot of independence, right, to operate. And
like, Apple can push back. Like, they're so big that they can push back.
Yeah. Well, they're global. Yeah, they don't. That's a big differentiator, too. Yeah, they're global.
Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, they have reputational power. They can push back against authorities, like smaller companies. Like, what, you're going to push back? And, you know, okay, we'll just shut you down. We'll slap you with a $1 billion fine.
So I'm going to ask you, just because why not? You're here. Do you really think that either, I hate to do it in the politics, do you really think either candidate's going to make a whole lot of difference?
I mean, yeah, I don't really get too much into politics. I'm also Canadian, so.
Their ability or willingness to actually try to be cracking down, I guess.
Gotcha. I mean, I don't necessarily listen to what they say. It's more just what actions they've done in the past that I look at. And it's pretty clear, like, the current administration that's in the White House now has been anti-crypto, like with Elizabeth Warren's anti-crypto army and, you know, the SEC. So, I mean, that's all been clear. Ideally, what's best for the space is both sides become friendly to crypto. You know, this doesn't become like just a one party supports us and the other doesn't. Like, we would hope by now that both parties see the opportunity for innovation and the harm it's done to America with a lot of jobs and innovation going overseas. So I think what I'd hope for is it's quite clear, like, Trump going to the Bitcoin conference and engaging with the community. It's clear, like, he likely will be pro-crypto, like, good for the community. And we would hopefully see that from the other side as well. So hopefully, okay. You know, in terms of, like, regulation and cracking down, yeah, I guess, you know, we'll probably see after the elections are done who's going to be in office and who they're going to elect for the SEC.
Yeah, fair. All right. You know what? We've had a good amount of time, Warren.
Yeah, this is great.
I hope you appreciate it. Maybe you'll come back. You know, we're looking always for people who are, can bring more knowledge to the party, you know, but why don't we shift gears? And if anybody, if anybody who's in the audience now wants to come talk, we can start shifting and talking about drive chains. If that's all right. Unless, Lauren, do you want to give a plug before we officially end the breadcrumbs?
Sure, yeah, that'd be great. It's www.breadcrumbs.app. We highly recommend just pop in your own address or you know, your friend's address and see, like, what information comes out. But generally, we make it very easy to investigate and monitor crypto. For the common man or for, you know, any type of group that wants to see what's happening on the blockchain. You can DM me. I'm at Lauren Star. And, you know, thanks again for your time. You know, we just made Litecoin available to the community for retail. So
I got one final question. I'm sorry to do this to you. How does anybody track NFT wash trading and like laundering money through these NFTs? Is that even, are they just, is that just, they're stuck? How's the government?
I don't know. It's, stuff? It's possible. Most tools out there aren't even caught up to that. Like, it's hard enough just to be able to trace through crypto.
Yep.
You know, adding that layer of functionality or just even the education of what's different about an NFT versus a token like an ERC-20 is just that education alone for law enforcement is a big step. But I'd say most laundering still happens, you know, a lot of laundering still happens through NFTs, and law enforcement probably hasn't even caught up to that. Yeah. it's some type of high profile case. Yeah.
So obvious.
But we do support NFTs on our system as well.
Okay.
You know, that is one of our differentiations.
All right. Good to know. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And what I'll do is I'm going to clip this all out and I'll have it on an episode this weekend. So you could share it with
awesome, man.
And be like, and you could tell them I was on the Litecoin Underground. You know, don't brag too much, but I'm just telling you.
Okay.
I'm just joking.
I'll definitely use it to
put on your resume.